WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Sin and redemption are recurring themes in the work of filmmaker Paul Schrader, so it was a logical choice when director Martin Scorsese asked Schrader to write the screenplay for The Last Temptation of Christ. Scorsese had already directed Schrader's screenplays for Taxi Driver and Raging Bull. The Last Temptation of Christ has aroused angry protests by some Christian fundamentalists who object to scenes that portray Christ as having human desires and weaknesses. The protesters might be surprised to learn that Schrader was brought up in a very religious, Calvinist home. In fact, as a young man, he had planned to become a minister. Movies were banned by his church, and it wasn't until he was a teenager that he went to a movie theater. He loved the movies, and instead of entering the ministry, he became a film critic, then a screenwriter, then a director. He wrote and directed the films Blue Collar, Hardcore, American Gigolo, Mishima, and Light of Day. Schrader also directed the new film Patty Hearst, which opens September 23rd. The movie is based on Hearst's memoir about her abduction by the radical cult group the Symbionese Liberation Army. Hearst is played by Natasha Richardson, the daughter of Vanessa Redgrave and Tony Richardson. We have a two-part interview with Paul Schrader. Tomorrow, we'll discuss his religious background and his early films. Today, we focus on his two new films, The Last Temptation of Christ and Patty Hearst. Schrader didn't initiate the Patty Hearst movie. I asked him what interested him in the project.
I've always liked films and gotten involved with films that take a particular point of view and follow it to its logical or illogical conclusion and doesn't wink at the audience or indicate to the audience. And these films, often the point of view is of someone that is socially marginal, you know, be it a psychopathic cab driver, a suicidal Japanese novelist, a thug boxer, a gigolo, in fact, Christ himself. And just take that point of view and see where it leads. And what interested me about the script was that it was from her point of view and that there were no cutaways to the family or to the police. And the moment I started thinking about what her point of view would be, I had to come to terms with the fact that for the first 6 weeks, she was in a closet blindfolded. And so that the world wasn't really the world that she imagined because she couldn't see it. And
well, describe how you filmically solve the problem there of telling the story from the perspective of someone who was blindfolded.
Well, you know, I think the film deals with, during that section, psychological states of place rather than physical states of place. To put it another way, you know, it's surreal. It is the world that a kind of horrific world that might be imagined, not necessarily by her, but by the filmmaker.
The story of Patty Hearst really captured the attention of the public. I wonder if you got caught up in it at the time or not.
Well, certainly. You know, it was Polaroid folklore. it was on every day and everywhere you went. People said, you know, what do you think of Patty Hearst? I did not imagine it being a film. And I don't think I would have ever written a script on this material because it violates the central commercial tenet of movie making, which is one of the reasons it was a rather difficult film to make.
But what's that tenet?
Is that we go to movies, I believe, to see people take charge of things. Basically, since we can't really control our own lives, we go to movies and see people who do. Patty Hearst did not take control of her life. She did not act. She was acted upon. She is a passive protagonist. And had she ever tried to escape or had she been killed or, you know, taken some more active role in this drama, it would have been a normal movie. And I think the reason it was never made was that, you know, how do you lick this problem of a passive protagonist? Because you have to start building the movie around your protagonist, rather than letting your protagonist pull the movie with him or her.
Mm-hmm. Paul Schrader is my guest, and he directed the new movie Patty Hearst, which is about to open, and he also wrote the screenplay for The Last Temptation of Christ. You actually, I think, met with Patty Hearst, and she gave you several pages of notes after she read the screenplay. Did she tell you anything that you were able to use?
Yeah, I didn't really meet with her. I gave her a phone call. I said, if you have any comments on the script, please send them to me now rather than afterward, because I can't do anything about them afterward. So she sent me about a 12-page memo that I found remarkably objective and dealing primarily with matters of fact, you know, this wouldn't have happened that way. He wouldn't have said that. And then some of her feelings, which were incorporated into her final speech in the film.
Okay. Did she challenge anything? Well, I guess you hadn't written the script anyway, so.
Yeah, but no, I mean, she understood the process. She had sold the rights to her book. A script had been written. And the train was starting to leave the station, and she couldn't stop it. So she made comments.
I'm sure everybody wants to know if you think that she was brainwashed or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, she now says that was the case. For a number of years, she tried to sort of pretend it wasn't. But, if it looks like a cow and walks like a cow, it's a cow. And in this case, it's brainwashing. And it doesn't take 57 days to do that. The U.S. military has done some testing, and they estimate that for a soldier, it's 8 to 10 days of this kind of passive coercion can turn a soldier around. And so, it's not that unusual or spectacular a thing to be brainwashed. Let me put you in a closet with a bunch of threatening people for a week or two, and we'll see what happens.
You cast people who were pretty unknown in the movie world in the film Patty Hearst. And your previous film, Light of Day, starred two very well-known people, the actor Michael J. Fox and the rock star Joan Jett. I was wondering if your experiences working with them led you at all to work with people who were lesser known in your new movie.
No, I just wanted a sense of freshness so that you could sort of look at the film without bringing all the baggage of previous film associations.
This is, in a way, a film about being transformed by radical politics. Whether or not Patty Hearst was brainwashed, certainly the people who joined the SLA changed their names, overcame their middle-class identities, which they didn't want anymore. As the movie points out, a couple of them really wished that they were black. You really describe the theater of radical politics in the movie and the effect of that in transforming people's identities. And I was wondering if that kind of radicalism ever had a similar appeal to you?
Well, I think it's important to remember about the SLA that they are not reflective of any responsible political group, no matter how far you go to the left.
Yeah, well, they're kind of where this paranoid schizophrenic fringe meets radical politics.
Yeah, I mean, it's closer to the Jonestown crowd, which came out of Oakland, came out of the same area about 6 months later. In my mind, the SLA has more connections with cult than with politics.
Mm-hmm.
And they had no constituency and they had no real credentials. I just sort of said that. I forgot what the question was.
Oh, about being transformed by rhetoric and radical politics, by looking at it as a kind of theater.
Yeah, I mean, they were transformed by a number of things. They were, one of the underlying things that to really understand this particular group is that they were all genuine Negrophiles. And they spoke in black street dialect. There's two things underneath it. One was a strong lesbian kind of feminism, and another was this desire to be black revolutionaries. White middle-class kids who want to be black revolutionaries. And in fact, when I was doing the rehearsals for the film, the cast all spoke in this kind of ersatz black street dialect, and it was just so, maybe not racist, but it was so kind of caricatured that I just knew I couldn't do it on the screen, even though that's how they actually spoke.
Did you have the temptation to do any rewriting, since you've written so many screenplays yourself? This is when you were directing, that you didn't write yourself?
Well, I did a few things. I added narration. But basically, I abided by the script. And I liked the script, and I wanted to work right away. And I didn't want to, you know, stop the whole process and sit down and rewrite the movie. And so I just added some things that that helped me out. And the foremost of that was the narration.
How did this experience leave you feeling about taking on movies that you didn't initiate yourself?
Well, you know, I like it. And, you know, I came up in the film school generation when this idea of the writer-director was sacrosanct. And I don't really believe that much anymore. I think there's a valuable creative friction in the wedding of a writer and a director. And I think the way that Scorsese and I have worked on those three films is actually very good for both of us. And so I'm moving away from this notion of the writer-director. And in fact, I did a film called Light of Day, and I think the film was hurt by me being both writer and director.
How so?
Well, you know, I think the writer in me was holding back the director, and the director was trying to protect the writer. And if they had been different people, there would have been a feistier exchange, which would have helped the film.
Well, you mentioned your collaborative relationship with Martin Scorsese. He asked you to write the screenplay for The Last Temptation of Christ, and based on Kazantzakis' book.
Right.
Now, redemption, sin have always been themes in your movies, but did you want to take on those themes as directly as you had to do to actually write about Jesus?
Well, you know, Marty has said something to this effect, too, that when you've been dealing in metaphorical ways with the issues of sin and guilt and redemption, it's pretty irresistible to pass up the opportunity to deal with the original item.
Did you share Kazantzakis' vision of Jesus' humanity?
Yeah, well, I mean, the goal was to adapt the book,
uh-huh.
You know, and that essentially what is on screen is Kazantzakis' vision. You know, everyone says it's Scorsese's Christ and so forth, but, you know, Marty will be the first to tell you that the overriding vision of the film is Kazantzakis. And one of the things that I am most proud of in the film is that it is, I believe, very both a good movie and faithful to a good book, which is a rare combination.
Scorsese is from a Roman Catholic Italian New York background. You're from a Calvinist small town Midwest background. And I was wondering if your backgrounds, especially your different religious backgrounds, Protestant versus Catholic, affected the way you wanted to see Christ portrayed visually or verbally on the screen.
Yeah, well, you know, this collaboration, because before this film we did Taxi Driver and Raging Bull.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's a nice kind of friction there because we both are very morally grounded and both have the same kind of religious beliefs, but we're culturally different, and so it creates a very felicitous friction. And then that is, again, doubled in the case of Last Temptation, because you're adapting a book which is basically from a Greek Orthodox background. And one of the nice things about the film is this kind of layer cake of theological perspectives.
Mm-hmm. So is there an example of something that you both felt should be represented differently because
of
your backgrounds?
You know, like the book, Kazantzakis was not only sort of influenced by Nietzsche and you know, Calvin and all the sort of Protestant thinkers, but also heavily influenced by the East. And you know, I'm trying to find a way to make it sound simple, just basically mysticism. And when I adapted the book, I felt much more comfortable with the, you know, the Nietzschean aspects than with the Eastern aspects. So I started moving the script that way. And then when Marty adapts the script into a film, he feels more comfortable with Catholic visual iconography than, you know, with Protestant or Greek Orthodox. And so you see it shift, you know, each time it changes hands. And what keeps it from falling apart is that each set of hands is an interesting set of hands.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk with you more about your work and also about your life, but first we're going to take a short break. Paul Schrader is my guest, and he wrote the screenplay for The Last Temptation of Christ and also directed the forthcoming film Patty Hearst. His other film credits include the screenplays for Taxi Driver and Raging Bull, which were both directed by Martin Scorsese. And Schrader also wrote and directed Hardcore, Blue Collar, American Gigolo, and Light of Day. He's joining us from the NPR Bureau in New York. This is Fresh Air. Screenwriter and director Paul Schrader is my guest. Let's talk some more about Last Temptation of Christ. You started the screenplay for this in 1981, and I understand that there was a clause in your contract that said if the movie wasn't shot within 6 years, you would get the next opportunity at directing it if Scorsese hadn't already begun work on it. How would you have directed Last Temptation of Christ differently?
Well, first of all, that's a little incorrect.
Oh, okay, yeah.
It took 6 years to get the film made, but I had just said that if Marty ever decides not to make the film, I have to be given a chance to raise the money to make it for myself.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't anything as explicit as 6 years.
Right.
Okay. How would you have directed it differently?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I mean, you know, you could waste a lot of time in this life thinking about things that don't happen, and I choose not to. You know, I just assume I would have directed it differently, but I'm not going to sit down and figure out how, you know, since I never had the opportunity.
The words of Christ and Judas are written in contemporary vernacular. How much of that is you, and how much of that is Kazantzakis?
Well, Kazantzakis wrote the original script in a dialect so that he could be slangy.
Mm-hmm.
And because, you know, he felt the same limitations that anyone would feel in dealing with the scriptures, because people remember this King James English, and you can't make a film in Aramaic. So that you don't want to make it in King James English, because that's just certainly incorrect. And you don't want to make it in Aramaic, because no one will understand it. So you have to find some way to make it sound fresh. And that means you just have to bite the bullet and use vernacular.
Well, instead of live by the sword, you die by the sword, it's you wrote, you live by this, you die by this.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of the dialogue was changed by,
I see, uh-huh,
by Scorsese. And mm-hmm, I think, you know, basically because it isn't in Aramaic, but it is in street English, it will always sound wrong. And in the end, when he's directing the movie, he's more comfortable with his version of how it sounds wrong than someone else's version of how it sounds wrong. So it keeps getting changed.
What was your version of how that sounded wrong?
My version was a little more poetic. It was a little, you know, a little more florid than his version.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're writing on the page, it's always a different thing, and you tend to write speeches, you know. And when you're directing, you tend to direct conversations. So part of that is the process in all films. But I have a memory that my script was a little more purple than the movie.
Could you recite any of it?
No.
Okay.
I mean, the lines that stand out to me, the ones I remember, are the ones that are still in the movie, you know.
Mm-hmm, such as?
Well, like, you know, Judas's final speech to Jesus when he says, you know, I loved you, we had the world in our hands. And, you know, that kind of impassioned dialogue. And the exchange between Jesus and Judas when he says that, you know, you're the only one who's strong enough to betray me, and that kind of stuff. It was more along those lines. But I have absolutely no complaint about this. That is not only part of a director's prerogative, it's part of his mandate.
Was the screenplay toned down from the original version? I believe you wrote about two drafts, and then there were several drafts after that. Was the screenplay consciously toned down because of the controversy?
Not much. Certainly not because of the controversy. In the original novel, Paul stones Mary Magdalene to death. And that was Marty just said to me, he said, with everything else I'm doing, I just can't have St. Paul stone a pregnant woman to death. So you know, that was like a toning down decision. And some of the sexual language may have been pulled back a little, but not any more than the sort of changes that are made on any of our collaborations.
Did you expect this degree of controversy when you started working on the film?
Not when I started writing it, because I'd come from a conservative religious background that was rather intellectual, so I was used to kind of intense theological argument. But then in 83, when the evangelicals blocked the film from being made at Paramount, we knew it was coming.
Did you feel that you understood the protesters at all because of the religious background you were from?
Some of them, and and I know some of them, and I've been doing some interviews with the religious press. But you also have to understand that the debate was originally framed by the evangelical right, and it was framed in such a way that the conservative Christian middle got dragged into the fray, and then when the film came out, which is why the film had to be rushed out, a lot of Christians in the conservative middle found themselves rather uncomfortable, having previously allied themselves with the evangelical right on this. And so there's been a kind of a readjusting of those attitudes.
Were you ever the slightest bit concerned yourself that it might be a sin to write this way about Jesus?
No, I mean, there's an element of anti-intellectualism in all of this. And just because you need the faith of a child to enter into the kingdom of heaven doesn't mean you have to have the mind of a child. And it is possible to be an intelligent, questioning person and still have faith. And if I remember correctly, the Protestant Reformation was about exactly this point. And there is nothing wrong with this kind of theological argument. And certainly this argument, the dual nature of Christ, is the most central to the to Christianity itself.
Did writing the screenplay bring you back to reading the Old and New Testaments?
Yeah, well, it threw me back, obviously, not only into the historical research, but also into the evolving theology of the nature of Christ.
Now, there used to be a ban in your church against seeing movies. Does that ban still exist?
No. I think that they have made that a matter of individual conscience now. The ban actually began in the 1920s as a result of the way theater was headed at that time.
So people you know from your hometown could have seen the movie?
Yes, I think it is now a matter of individual conscience. It used to be a synodical decree, but I think that's been done away with.
Filmmaker Paul Schrader is my guest. I want to ask you a couple of other things about working with Marty Scorsese, since you've made several films with him, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull, The Last Temptation of Christ. Do your temperaments match? You know, we talked earlier about you being from a small town background, you being Protestant, and he being from New York City, Italian, Roman Catholic. When you're actually collaborating on a movie, do you bring a different kind of temperament, a different kind of pacing to it?
Yeah, I mean, we're both real feisty and opinionated, and we can't really collaborate in the same room. You know, it would very quickly degenerate into some kind of squabble. So basically, you know, he doesn't bother me when I write, and I don't bother him when he directs. You know, there's a communication that is very deep and very understood, but it's not two people working over a desk. And it was sort of funny because I was talking to Richard Price, who had written Color of Money with Marty. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, when I read your script of Temptation, I couldn't imagine how it would appear on screen. And I said, that's the opposite thing I felt, because when I saw the film, I was not surprised, one iota, by anything. I just sat there watching it, and I said, okay, now he's done that. Now he's going to do this. Now he's going to do that. And I knew exactly what it would look like, you know, even though I had not seen any of the film and hadn't talked to Marty about it in years. And so there is an underlying sympathy that we share.
You wrote The Last Temptation of Christ. You wrote the first draft of it 7 years ago, back in 1981. The film is causing so much controversy now in the United States. How attached do you feel to it?
Very much. I mean, you know, I think it's a terrific novel, and I'm very proud of the script, very proud of the movie. And, you know, as we discussed earlier, it's a script that if, for any reason, Marty had not made, I would have made.
Do you find other people want to come and talk theology with you?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Is that good or bad?
Well, you know, it can get a little draining.
Two of your screenplays have starred Robert De Niro, Raging Bull, and Taxi Driver, and he was supposed to, I believe, play Christ in The Last Temptation. Mm-hmm. What was the reason why he didn't finally play the role?
Well, the way he said it to me was he just said that no one will believe me in a sheet.
No one would believe him in a sheet?
Yes. Uh-huh. He just didn't think he could play the period, you know. I think he was wrong, but, you know, obviously he has to go by his own instincts.
What films do you have in the works now?
Well, I just finished writing an original script, a big love story. I wrote a script years ago that Brian De Palma made into a film called Obsession. Mm-hmm. And I've always wanted to write a script like that for myself. You know, one of those undying love stories. This one is called Forever Mine. And so I did that this summer and wrote one of endless love.
Paul Schrader wrote the screenplay for The Last Temptation of Christ. His new film, Patty Hearst, opens on September 23rd. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.